time now for our weekly chat with the experts at ETF.com, the world's leading independent authority on ETFs.
People have been saying there are too many mutual funds since the 80s. For all the talk of smart beta, they haven't pulled in huge assets. The active managers are showing up in the ETF space.
Laura, so we're going to talk ETF flows. But before we do that, I have to mention October was a record trading volume month for ETFs. In particular, bond ETFs have never seen more trade volume ever. And guess what? There were no issues with ETFs. Everything functioned exactly the way it was supposed to. Can we finally put to bed these ETFs haven't been tested yet claims? I mean, what else do the naysayers need to see at this point?
I really hope so. I mean, you hear these sorts of claims pick up after every little spot of volatility, but it's like we had ETFs during the great financial crisis. We had ETFs during the dot-com crash. I mean, we've had them for a while. They've been tested, and they've been tested through a lot worse than this. So the ETF structure hasn't kerploded the moment that volatility returned to the market. I think we can finally lay that to rest.
Well, and you know, I think some people forget ETFs were actually created to provide a liquidity buffer, right? After the 1987 stock market crash, they were created to help markets in times of stress. That is literally why they were invented. It's always interesting to me that these claims are still out there. I have to mention Dave Nodig had a great piece out this morning on ETFs as shock absorbers. Highly recommend reading that if you want to do a deeper dive. But let's talk ETF flows. Even though the markets were down in October, ETFs actually took in a little bit of money. Give us a recap here. What stood out to you in terms of ETF flows?
Sure. Well, one point I wanted to make about the volumes, if we can step back just a second, the fact is that we saw a lot of the ETFs with the highest amount of volume were the ETFs that were used as trading vehicles. So to your point, you know, ETFs being used as shock absorbers, as being, these instruments of liquidity, well, that's exactly what we saw. We saw SPY and AG and LQD and JNK, these huge trading instrument, trading vehicle style ETFs. They were the ones attracting most of the volume, and that's because active managers were using them to effectively change their portfolios around. So I just wanted to bring that up because I think it kind of goes back to your point about ETFs being the shock absorber for the market and so on. So, but to your question about ETF flows, the thing that stood out, I think, to me, first and foremost, was what you mentioned at the top of the segment, which is that bond ETFs saw outflows. And this is the first time we've seen outflows from bonds in 3 years, roughly 3 years. The iShares Core Aggregate Bond ETF, that's ticker AG, the largest bond ETF on the market, it saw $2.6 billion in outflows this past month. But the Vanguard Bonds, Total Bond Market ETF, BND, which is basically the same, it tracks basically the same index, that saw just a teeny tiny bit of inflows. So, but that's still like chump change because BND brings in hundreds of millions of dollars in a month. We definitely saw some major outflows in the bond ETF space as a whole.
Laura, if you look at it, well, I was going to ask, if you look at the bond ETF flows, what's interesting to me is overall there were outflows, but if you look at shorter term or floating rate bond ETFs, there have been pretty significant inflows. I actually saw ETF.com's ETF of the week last week was the Spider Bloomberg Barclays 1-3 month T-bill ETF BIL. That took in nearly $1 billion. And was in the top 10 of inflows for October. The JP Morgan Ultra Short Income ETF, JPST, that was also in the top 10 of inflows. And then if you look year to date, the iShares Short Treasury Bond ETF, SHV, and the iShares Floating Rate Bond ETF, FLOT, those are both in the top 10 of inflows again for the year. I think Mint, the PIMCO Short Maturity ETF, that's taken in a bunch of money. So if you look at this, you know, maybe more holistically, do you think this is all just rate driven? Investors moving out of longer duration and into shorter?
I think that's probably a large part of it, yeah. I think with rates rising, investors are trying to position their portfolios to not just lessen the sting of rising rates, but also to, just keep themselves flexible, whatever the future lies ahead, right? Or whatever lies ahead in the future, I should say.
Okay, so what about on the equity side?
Okay, so on the equity side, we saw some kind of interesting stuff happening. So during the most volatile parts of the volatile market swings, we actually saw net inflows into some of the bigger market bellwether funds, your SPY, your IVV, and your VOO. And that might sound a little counterintuitive at first, but the reason it happened is kind of simple. The reason is that the price of the underlying S&P 500 stocks for these ETFs grew cheap compared to the price of the ETFs themselves. And that kind of caught the interest of authorized participants, who are the investors who make new ETF shares and destroy the ETF shares. So they kind of, their radar got pinged, and this price disconnect got them buying the underlying stocks and selling ETF shares, which, means you ultimately end up with a bunch of new creations in the market, which is what we saw. So as for whether, investors writ large, mom and pops who are not in the authorized participant business, whether they were, buying the dip and all of that, I think we saw them pivoting into lower cost products. So, IVV and VOO, like I mentioned, they were big winners for October. They're the buy and hold version of the S&P 500 ETF. SPY, meanwhile, is much more of a trader's vehicle, as we talked about earlier. Well, that had net outflows. So, to me, that kind of suggests that traders are, they're doing their thing. Traders going to trade, right? But investors, buy and hold investors are getting in and they're staying in.
Well, what's interesting, too, I was looking at year-to-date flows, and this sort of fee rotation is really pronounced. You do have IVV and VOO taking in large sums of money. And then if you look at the top two international ETFs, the iShares Core MSCI EFA ETF, IEFA, and the iShares Core MSCI Emerging Markets ETF, IEMG, those four, those are your top four in inflows. IEFA is actually number one. And then, on the other side of the equation, if you look at SPY, EFA, EEM, those are all in the top five of losers. So, it's interesting just seeing this continued fee rotation. One question I had on the international ETFs, performance has been pretty rough this year, right? IEFA is down over 8%. IEMG is down about 13%. And, again, with those, I know there's been some fee rotation in the space, but are you surprised at the inflows into international ETFs just given the performance?
I'm not too surprised. I think that whenever performance dips, people are going to use that as a chance to buy in. But I also think the key point here is that some of these international funds that you mentioned are ex-U.S. And, not only are they cheap, but they don't have exposure to U.S. stocks, which, depending on how you feel about where the U.S. economy is headed in the near term or the medium term, especially with the elections coming up, today, actually, that may or may not appeal to you, right? So, yeah.
What about the Communication Services Select Spider ETF, XLC? This thing took in nearly $2 billion in October, and it's taken in nearly $4 billion since its launch, which was only back in June. I'm curious, is this money just coming out of some other products after the GICS reclassification?
I am so glad you brought up XLC. I'm so glad, because I think this is just a fascinating example of, I think it's a fascinating case. So XLC, like you said, is the new sector ETF brought online to kind of reflect the new GICS sector. We saw, and the GICS change went into effect in September, right? So we saw some investors moving into XLC prior to the GICS change. But what we have seen in October is that a lot more didn't move over before that changeover, and we're seeing them move into it now. So XLC brought in almost $2 billion last month. That's the third most of any ETF on the market. At the same time, we saw XLK, which is the State Street Tech Sector ETF, and XLY, which is the Consumer Discretionary ETF, both of them lost almost $2 billion in the past month as well. So, and that's partly because they were affected by the GICS change. You know, the FANG stocks were moved out of the tech sector. There were some new, like I think Alibaba and other e-commerce marketplaces were moved into consumer discretionary. So, you know, there was some rejiggering around, and I think that what we're seeing now is that investors are looking at their sector exposure and saying, hey, wait a minute, this isn't behaving like I think it ought to. Let me rejigger things around a little bit.
Yeah, I think it's going to be fascinating continuing watching what happens with all of those ETFs. Laura, we have just a couple of minutes left here. Going back to year-to-date flows, when I was looking at the numbers last week, it was interesting. The top two in inflows were, of course, iShares and Vanguard. But then the next three were Schwab, J.P. Morgan, and First Trust. So absent from that list was State Street and Invesco, which I think may surprise some investors. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I think it's fascinating watching the league tables and seeing how the jockeying is happening. You know, we're really only just a few months away, I think, from seeing Charles Schwab overtake Invesco. All they need is a couple of more good months like they had, and maybe they will be third instead of Invesco. And I think the drivers here are twofold, right? So one, it's this continuing fee war that we talked about. State Street and Invesco, they have plenty of cheap ETFs in their portfolios. And in fact, the cheapest, the ones that they have that are cheapest in their class are still bringing in assets. But the other old stalwarts of the space, the SPYs, the EEMs, that sort of thing, they're just not cheap enough, right? And you also see this too for Invesco, which, you know, PowerShares used to be like the name in smart beta, right? But now everybody and their grandmother has a smart beta ETF now, and a lot of them are cheaper than Invesco's products. So, you know, Invesco has been doing a lot of M&A lately. We'll see if that helps kind of build out their bench a little bit or whatnot. But, you know, it's definitely a fee war thing happening here. But the other thing, too, and this goes to why we've seen J.P. Morgan and First Trust bring so many assets in year to date. And it's something that Eric Balchunas over at Bloomberg calls bring your own assets, BYOA. You know, these are big asset managers with lots of clients, existing client assets and other vehicles that they can just sort of funnel over to their ETF products. And we saw this, we saw JP Morgan do this to great effect over starting in the summer. They've just been funneling billions of dollars into their beta builder products, you know, the Japanese one, the Canadian equities one, so on and so forth. And now we're seeing it with JPSC, although, you know, part of that, too, is what we talked about earlier with the rate hikes and people trying to position their portfolios with a short-term bond ETF. But, you know, this is definitely JP Morgan and First Trust eating their own lunch.
No, for sure. And then I would add, just with somebody like Charles Schwab having a brokerage platform, having a captive audience, that's certainly been a tailwind for them in gathering assets. Laura, always appreciate the insight. Thank you for joining us this week.
Thank you for having me on.
That was ETF.com's Laura Krieger.